Hey guys, I'm Chris.
Hey everybody, I'm Robert.
And we're the Film Flamers.
And it's zombie month.
It is, March of the Zombies.
Per tradition.
Right, at least our slow-moving zombies. I guess the fast ones don't really march.
They march in a different way. They sprint.
Right.
Sprint of the zombies.
Yeah, and I think, next week we're going to be covering like the first ever zombie movie with fast-moving zombies?
Cargo?
Oh shit, I thought we were doing Return of the Living Dead.
That's the following month.
Damn it. Yes. That's really fucking me up with Law Zombie Month.
I know.
It's trickling in. It's, oh my God, it's spreading.
We're running out of zombie movies, or at least good ones to
March
cover.
March has lost zombie containment, and now it's going into April.
It's going into April. So instead of waiting for next March to cover more zombies, we're just doing it in April.
That's right.
So this could be the last zombie month for a couple years, mayhaps.
I guess. I mean, it's always a good time to watch Return of the Living Dead.
Every time is a good time to watch that movie. But that's not what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we can scrape the bottom of the barrel of the zombie genre.
Sure.
For next March. I'm not too worried, but let's only worry about what we can control right now.
Okay. And what are we doing?
We're rehashing Night of the Living Dead.
So we covered Night of the Living Dead in our first year, and now we're talking about this one, the remake.
Right. And is this still your number one favorite movie? Or not this one, sorry. The original.
The original is my favorite horror movie of all time.
From 1968.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's important from multiple angles.
It is.
You should go back and listen to our deep dive listeners.
That's right. Perhaps after you finish this one, though.
And tell us what we talked about, because we don't remember.
I remember. It was shorter than I thought it was going to be. I felt like I was going to have more things to say about it.
Well, right now we're covering that remake of Night of the Living Dead, which is, of course, an American horror film directed by Tom Savini in his feature directorial debut and starring Tony Todd and Patricia Tallman. It's a remake of George Romero's 1968 film of the same title. Romero rewrote the original 1968 screenplay he had originally co-authored with John A. Russo.
George A. Romero and John A. Russo?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Jorge and Hane.
Hane. Like the original, the film follows seven strangers as they meet and survive, try to, in a rural farmhouse following the awakening of cannibalistic zombies. It's the only official remake of the 1968 film, with other unofficial remakes coming out after as a result of the source material's lack of copyright ownership.
Okay, listeners. They're coming to get you, Barbara. Again. This is Night of the Living Dead. Again.
They came to pay their respects.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Why do you have to be so cruel?
What?
Show some respect.
Now, they're running for their lives.
A biologist in Stockton, California have released reports focusing on the phenomenon, specifically on that trance-like state.
Every shelter is becoming a trap.
Are you sure we're gonna be all right?
Cooper, you gotta help me out!
And every road out...
Don't stop no matter what happens.
...is just another dead end.
They're coming right for us!
George Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
One idyllic August afternoon, siblings Barbara, played by Patricia Tallman, and Johnny visit their mother's grave in a remote Pennsylvania cemetery. An elderly man with blood on his forehead bumps into them there, garbles something, and bolts in terror. While offering to help him, they are attacked by a zombie. Johnny is killed to death while Barbara flees the cemetery and discovers what appears to be an abandoned farmhouse. She seeks shelter there, only to find another pack of zombies roaming around the inside. Shortly after, a man named Ben, played by Tony Todd, arrives at the scene and helps Barbara dispatch the zombies. The two quickly form a bond and clear the house of the undead and begin barricading the doors and windows as night falls. They soon discover other survivors holed up in the cellar. A man named Harry Cooper, played by Tom Towles, his wife Helen, played by McKee Anderson, their daughter Sarah, who was bitten by a zombie and has fallen ill, and teenage lovers Tom, played by William Butler, and Judy, played by Kate Finneran. The group is divided over what their next course of action should be. Harry insists that everyone retreat into the cellar and hunker down to wait for the authorities, like little bitches. Ben disagrees, believing that the cellar is a death trap, and they would be better off fortifying the house and fending off the horde. Noticing the zombies' limited mobility, Barbara suggests that the group just leave the house on foot. A scuffle between Ben and Harry leaves the Coopers in the basement to tend with Sarah, while the other survivors continue reinforcing the doors and windows upstairs. The loud construction attracts a mob of zombies to the farmhouse. The group devises a plan to escape using Ben's truck, which is out of fuel, by refueling at the locked gas pump nearby. They find a set of keys and proceed to drive up the hill toward the gas pump, but their plan begins to unravel when Ben falls from the bed of the truck and is left to defend himself. To their horror, the key to the gas pump is not among the set they brought with them. Realizing they are out of time, Tom idiotically shoots the lock off, causing gasoline to ignite a burning torch in the cargo bed. The truck and gas pump explodes, killing both Tom and Judy in a fiery gas pump explosion that explodes into a fiery explosion, killing them both. Tom and Judy Rose die, burnt alive by the fiery explosion of fire. So it goes. Ben has no choice but to make his way back to the house, only to find things beginning to dissolve into chaos. Harry has wrestled Barbara's gun away from her and is now armed. Unbeknownst to the survivors upstairs, Sarah has succumbed to the bite on her arm and is transformed into a zombie. She attacks and bites her distraught mother. When Sarah makes her way upstairs, she triggers a shootout between her father, who is trying to protect her, and Ben and Barbara, who are trying to protect themselves. Both Ben and Harry are badly wounded, and Barbara shoots Sarah in the head, falling to the floor from a gunshot wound caused by the gun that Barbara was holding, which shot Sarah in the head, who died. But it was already dead. Harry retreats upstairs to the attic, while Ben makes his way to the cellar, ironically, where he shoots a reanimated Helen. Ben gradually goes into shock, and after realizing the gas key has been in the cellar the entire time, he laughs mindlessly at the irony before he dies from his injuries, slowly bleeding to death, causing him to die of his bleeding injuries slowly until he dies. Meanwhile, Barbara leaves the farmhouse alone and attempts to find help. She is horrified and sickened after witnessing the charred corpses of Tom and Judy being savagely devoured by the zombies. She's not sure they were cooked to temp, and food safety has always been a passion of hers. She eventually joins a group of countryside locals who are clearing the area of the undead and awakens the next day in a makeshift camp surrounded by the safety of the media and townspeople led by Sheriff McClelland. Noticing a group of hillbillies drunkenly antagonizing a small group of captured zombies and thinking of herself as some kind of great value poet philosopher, she comments on the similarities between the living and the undead. Price drop. She returns to the farmhouse to find Ben, who was now zombified. He gazes at Barbara before being shot. He falls to the floor after being shot in the head, bleeding from the wound in his head caused by the shot to his head, killing him. Ben dies, again, but this time as a zombie dead. When Harry emerges from the attic alive, Barbara kills him in a fit of rage and retribution for being such a tiresome asshole and turns to leave the house, telling the vigilantes they have another one for the fire. Barbara watches grimly as the bodies are burned on a pyre, including Harry's, who has died of a gunshot wound from Barbara to the head from the gun she fired at him, from which he died of a gunshot wound to the head.
The end? I got paid by the word. What do I have to tell you?
And that may be the most fun we have talking about this movie. That could be the only sounds of laughter in this episode. Time will tell.
Night of the Living Dead was released on October 19th, 1990 on more than 1,500 screens. It brought in $2.8 million in its opening weekend, securing the number 6 spot at the box office. Other films in the top 10 that weekend included Ghost, Pacific Heights, Goodfellas, and Fantasia. Jesus Christ. The film fell to number 14 at the box office in its second week, which is a 62% drop. It would eventually gross $5.8 million against a budget of $4.2
million. Okay.
That's kind of a bomb.
Kind of, yeah. So when I looked at Box Office Mojo, it literally only had 2 weeks listed. So that means it played in the theater, but it made next to no money after that. Sad.
Yep.
Night of the Living Dead has a 68% on Rotten Tomatoes with an audience score also at 68%. The site's consensus reads, Night of the Living Dead doesn't quite reinvent the original's narrative, but its sleek action and amplified gore turn it into a worthy horror showcase.
I don't agree with that.
Amplified gore, my foot.
Yeah. Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly rated it D+ and wrote, quote, in the history of bad ideas, George Romero's decision to produce a color remake of his disturbingly frenzied 1968 zombie fest, The Night of the Living Dead, has to rank right up there with New Coke. The original Night was taken by some to be a statement about the Vietnam War. This one isn't about anything larger than Romero's desire to make a buck. Yikes. Writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, Roger Ebert awarded the film 1 star out of a possible 4, writing, the remake is so close to the original that there is no reason to see both. I would kind of agree.
I would agree with that as well. If one had to only choose which one to watch, not this one. Right. Modern criticism has been more appreciative, however. Bloody Disgusting rated it 4.5 out of 5 stars and wrote, the film works on so many levels. Normally, remakes are horrible and diverge so much from the original film. This one is so close to the original, it's scary. In a retrospective at Pop Matters, academic Cynthia Freeland compared the racial politics of the original film and the gender politics of the remake. Freeland concludes that the original film's depiction of Barbara makes for better cinema, and the more feminist-friendly update of Barbara is too derivative of standard Final Girl tropes.
It's true, and it happens super quickly.
It does.
Savini often screens an uncut work print VHS copy of the film at conventions. According to Savini, quote, years later, I was at a midnight showing and did a Q&A before the movie, and I wasn't going to sit down and watch it, but I did. And it was the first time that I saw it objectively. And it's good. Savini is one of the only directors of the films that we've covered that I've actually met.
That's right. I have met him 2 times at 2 different conventions.
Oh.
So he's usually always there.
Yeah.
It does have some almost accolades at the Saturn Awards. It was nominated for Best Horror Movie, but lost to Silence of the Lambs, and was also nominated for Best Makeup and lost to Silence of the Lambs.
Right. Something that was kind of interesting to me is that it was nominated to begin with.
Yes. I also find that interesting. I went and looked up the other movies that were nominated that year because we recently discussed another one of the nominees for Best Horror Movie that year at the Saturns, and the whole slew of them are not very good. So,
well, Silence of the Lambs obviously needed to win.
Clearly, as it won the Oscar.
And that really feels like a new 90s movie. This feels like an old 80s movie. Like,
yes.
Or even 70s. It's really old style. It almost looks made for TV in some ways.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, because we're going to talk about that. The consensus on Rotten Tomatoes talks about amplified gore, and I'm like, it's not really amplified. It's just in color.
Watch the same fucking thing.
I mean, we can just see it a little bit better because blood doesn't look like just black oil. You know what I mean? Because it's not black and white. But meh.
This cast is also kind of interesting. I like that it retained the unknowns that were kind of in the original, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I don't know how it would have felt with big stars in a remake. You know, I'm sure it could have generated interest since it was already a classic really soon after when actually the original came out. Right. But we do have Tony Todd here, which, of course, is horror royalty
now. Yeah.
And I think he was already in Candyman before this. Right. Or no,
I feel like Candyman came out after this.
Interesting. OK.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the time, Tony Todd was, I mean, I don't know that he was an unknown. I don't know much about Tony Todd's career before this or Candyman. I saw this movie after its release. So I think I had already seen Candyman by the time I saw this remake.
Right. So,
but Tony Todd's good in this film, I feel.
He is. And of course, he also goes on later to become like the personification of death the Final Destination, I think, and Final Destination.
I feel like he has presence, like, clearly. Like, you have to have some kind of presence to be Candyman. I think that's just required of that particular role. And I think he does good here as well. You know, I feel like the original actor from Night of the Living Dead also had presence, and you just have to have someone very similar. And I think Tony Todd is very, very reminiscent of that particular actor.
I think he did a good job. I thought everyone really did a good job in this. I thought their acting troupe. Originally, I didn't like Patricia Tallman's character, Barbara, at first in this, and of course her brother, but they really, really went close to the original casting, and then they pivot, and you realize that Patricia Tallman had been kind of like masquerading as this, you know, mousy kind of character. And then they turn her into Ripley in about five minutes during the movie.
Exactly. She becomes very, very capable, like very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Which is completely different.
Because reasons.
Yeah. Because reasons. Which is totally different of the character of Barbara from the original movie. You know, and I feel like we're going to be doing that a lot when we talk about this, because I think this is the first time that we've done a deep dive of a movie that we have already talked about. It's our first remake to really deep dive into of a movie that we've covered before.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, it's still a good, solid story and good, solid acting. And it's, like, well, workmanlike filmmaking.
Workmanlike direction.
Yeah. Workmanlike direction, not really experienced or truly artistic in any way. Mm-hmm. You know, and it gets kind of the story told very competently. But some of the things that were my favorite parts of the original are missing here.
Well, and I think that it's impossible to talk about any remake, like, in a vacuum. You have to be able to compare it to the movie that came before it.
And that's inescapable.
Completely.
And it's completely fair.
Right. And I feel like we're going to be doing that a lot throughout this discussion, you know, and starting with the character of Barbara. Because the character of Barbara is so incredibly different in this movie than she was in the original. In the original, she's helpless and barely speaks. And it's kind of like catatonic or just like in shock for most of the movie.
Yeah. And I really remember a moment from the original that stood out to me. It was like seeing her brother through the crack in the door or whatever, you know, and really having a reaction to that, you know, that kind of pulled her out a little bit of the catatonia into panic, you know.
And that's what kills her.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And I feel like that's almost more grounded in a way. Versus like their view of her now, like starts with like the 60s or 70s view of women, you know, at its worst, and kind of evolves into, you know, Ripley from 4 years earlier, you know, the short hair, you know, the torn, you know, we've got her with the wife beater on or whatever. Right. And then she's got the ammo around her chest, you know, it's like, come on, this is so on the nose.
It really, really is. And I don't know, for better or for worse, like I kind of like this particular version of Barbara better. I like a more competent and I don't even know, just a capable woman, right?
Yeah, but I mean, just to do that, just to shoe it in, it seemed a little forced.
Well, and I feel like they really had to do something different in this movie.
To modernize it a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. And they did, but they really should have started different.
Well, I think it's impossible to want to make a Night of the Living Dead.
She was very Mary Sue at the front of this movie.
Very much. But there are some things that they just could not accomplish in this movie that the original does so well. And that's solely because of the time period in which it was made. They really can't say the same things, you know, or if they did, they could. Because, I mean, like, race relations are not perfect, you know, no matter when you are.
Yeah. And it tries to modernize it, but it just like fails on a lot of levels. So it still feels old or looks old, right? So maybe we should segue to the actual background of how this was made or why this was made, right? So Night of the Living Dead, it kind of touches on something one of the reviewers said, which was like George Romero making a buck, which I don't think is fair. Right. Mm-hmm. Because George Romero famously didn't make any money from the success of Night of the Living Dead, the way that deal was made. And so, you know, he was very, very green when he made those deals. And so he's made very, very little money on the franchise he built. And so this was another attempt for him to do so. He did a much better deal, I believe, with Dawn and Day of the Dead. You know, this is another thing for him to kind of have his own, you know, name on something as far as like monetarily. Right. And so, you know, George Romero said that, you know, the remake itself came about in part because of the issues of the profits of the original film. So there was a lengthy court battle over the rights to it, plus an oversight that caused the copyright notice not to be included. Mm-hmm. And that caused Romero to see like almost nothing, right? And almost anyone could use like Night of, you know, or the Living Dead type of stuff and kind of use and abuse his franchise as they have. Romero's production company, Image 10, eventually won that lawsuit, but the distributor went out of business before they could collect any money.
Shit.
So, yeah, another issue was the fact that filmmakers were worried about, you know, someone else might make the unauthorized remake. You know, Romero contacted Menahem Golan, who had heard that 21st Century Film Corporation was interested in a remake, and Romero, John Russo, and Russell Striner all worked on the original, collaborated for the first time in 20 years to make that happen. And Tom Savini was initially hired to perform the special effects because he had done so obviously on Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead for Romero. Obviously, they were friendly, you know, maybe even really good friends at this point, I'm sure. But he was actually persuaded to direct by Romero himself. I don't know, maybe as a trust issue, and he really wanted someone that was really technically capable that he trusted personally to do this. And so he did. So, I mean, he was drawn to the remake because he wasn't available. Famously, he wasn't available to do special effects on the original. He was there. I remember the anecdote. There was some sort of anecdote as Tom Savini being there, but he was too young to really do much. And he ended up being part of it in some way, shape, or form, but it wasn't to do the effects. Or maybe he was got sick or something. I forget what the anecdote was, but he wasn't able to really do it. And so he gave him another chance for Dawn of the Dead.
That's right.
Where all the zombies look blue.
That's right. And he definitely did work on Day of the Dead, which, if you want to talk about amplified gore, that's where that is. But Tom Savini has done work on lots of Romero films, like Creepshow, which we talked about in a deep dive.
Yeah.
Because they really are like good friends, and they remained close
through
many, many years. And I feel like if anyone was going to be tapped to do a remake of a George Romero film, I feel like Tom Savini would be like the first choice for that.
At least for the effects. I would never have thought as a director, right? Because if you look at the, you know, the people that work on this, the cinematographer, the music, like this is a fucking, you'd think they would have been more reverent in the making of this, and more stars would have been attached, more budget would have been given to this. So they put together this crack team of like the who's who of who's that to make this movie. And I don't know that it worked out so well, you know, as far as from an experience standpoint. And Tom Savini, of course, like this is when you need to kind of hire outside the house, I think, is too reverent to his friend and mentor's work, right? And so all of the stuff that Tom Savini could have done under his own direction, he did not do because he felt like it would have been disrespectful of the original or made it into some sort of like gore porn version. And he did not want to stain the name of, you know, his mentor and friend.
Or the name of a classic film, you know? And that's the thing, though. When you're going to make a remake of a film, you need to be able to do something different or make it interesting in some kind of way or try to exceed than what the previous film has done. And I don't feel like this movie really does that. And I feel like it could have and should have under the direction of Tom Savini. I don't care if you've never directed a film before. You know, like he's worked in film for decades by the time that this movie was being made. And so I just feel like there was a lost. Something was lost.
Yeah, and I felt like they went about it the wrong way. Like, you know, I don't think that they were originally trying to be restrained in the original. You know,
certainly
they were just
not
making a movie, the best movie they could with the best story they could at the time. And I think that's what they should have done here. Use that script and do the same thing. What does that mean in 1990? You know, and but they didn't do that. They were just trying to do like a color version, essentially, is what the producers end up making Savini do and what he felt comfortable with the special effects and kind of the combination is what we got. Speaking of those special effects, that team intentionally kept the effects restrained because they felt like excessive gore would be disrespectful to the original film. And I feel like that's a little bit of subscribing to the horror ghetto, and I don't like that. But I see their point to a certain extent. But, you know, like Saw and things like that hadn't come out yet, right? So I'm not sure. There was a lot of conservatism that came out post-1968 during the late 70s and certainly through mid-80s and onwards, right? After Reagan, right? We've already talked about this. We've seen this phenomenon. It's like the post-cruising phenomenon with movies. Between 1984 and 1998 or something, where things really kind of, you know, went anti-gore and everything had to be like super moral and, you know, had a point and things like that. And things were just not as edgy or dark as they were in the 70s or earlier 80s or certainly since then.
That's right. Hold on. I'm going to open up a discussion seltzer for this. Because I feel like the original Night of the Living Dead is not restrained whatsoever. right?
No.
For the time period in which it was made, I feel like that movie is quite shocking. Yes. So, I mean, that's part of the things that we talked about while discussing that movie. And I know that by the time 1990 had rolled around, the 80s were famous for things like video nasties over in Britain and being like just banned and like slashers and things like that. And I feel that there was just so much backlash from the general public the about stuff
panic
like that.
And all that stuff back then, the gay backlash, that was all happening around the same time.
Right. And so like trying to make a movie like Night of the Living Dead, or even just in the same vein or paying homage to it at this particular time period, is just the wrong time to do it.
Right.
If they would have waited just a little bit, you know, they could have made a really fantastic remake of the movie.
Dawn of the Dead, the remake.
You know? That's what I was just about to say. You know, like we have, we have talked about in a deep dive a movie that we've covered before that. Yeah. We did both Dawn of the Dead. And so, I mean, like they changed things about that movie and they made a movie that is like.
Yeah, they modernized it. They certainly made it that post 9/11, you know, edgy as crap, you know, movie to the point where we look back and we're like, oh my God, maybe they went too dark and edgy, you know?
It's possible.
With baby zombie and, you know, everyone dying at the end and everything else. But it's still kind of in the spirit of it, right? And that's certainly a far superior remake, in my opinion, than this. As far as just like quality, right?
Well, I feel like the only things that were really, really gory or shocking at this point in 1990 were things that were direct to video. And I know this movie was not. This was a theatrically released movie. But it looks and feels kind of like, you know, a straight to video movie.
It feels like a TV movie.
Yeah.
It's all lit so evenly and brightly. And what every fucking scene, it's crazy how even everything looks. And it's just so flat. There's very little dynamic cinematography happening.
And the music, for sure. Like, I never bring up score. But this just sounds like it was written by a cat. Like a cat at the piano. Like, honestly, it's like ting, 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 the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck am I listening to? So, I mean, like... I just, there are so many things that they could have done to really told a more modern version of this movie.
Yeah.
And they didn't do any of it. They could have had way better special effects because things have like progressed by then. They could have had way more shocking moments.
Return of the Living Dead 3 came out somewhere around here, right?
That was definitely in the early 90s.
And they really leaned into it in a shocking way.
For sure.
Right. And this one just didn't. And, you know, I don't know, they wanted to keep the film artistic, whatever that means, despite, you know, Savini's own reputation as like the king of splatter, right? Uh-huh. That said, to avoid an X rating, Savini had to cut several scenes from the film that I guess have never seen the light of day as far as I know. And maybe he has a master, maybe that VHS master has it, but I think if it's the master, then it's the cut that we saw in the theater.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's attributed the film's lack of popularity among horror fans to those cuts. So I guess you learned that lesson pretty quickly, right?
Well, I mean, for sure, because at this point, Tom Savini is a horror fan himself, right?
Yeah.
He's worked on many, many, many horror films. And
it's like he's trying to appease the critics more than his own fans or himself.
Like he knows what horror fans want to see.
Or at least the producers were, right?
And maybe that's the problem.
They wanted the safe bet. And Night of the Living Dead was never a safe bet.
No.
Right? It goes against the spirit of the original. The effects that are in this movie, like right from the fucking beginning, with Johnny or whatever his name is, Barbara's brother.
Yeah.
When he falls on the tombstone, like, oh my God, it's such a bad rubber body.
Yes.
Like the very first big effect is like that his fake ass, like you thought you were complaining at Misery.
I know.
My God, this was so much worse.
For real though.
Straight up like mall mannequin, like hitting that fucking tombstone. I was like, this is 1990.
When watching it, exactly what I said out loud. I was just like, the fuck was that? I was like, this is Tom Savini.
It was so bad. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I've had problems with Tom Savini before, like his animatronics and shit that he's done.
Yeah, but when it comes to body gore, though, the man knows how to do it.
The guy did Blue Zombies. Somehow this guy has a job after not doing great jobs with stuff, like, over and over and over.
Yeah, but he knows how to have, like, innards and
he knows blood. How to have gore, for sure.
Yeah.
And he puts gore in actual, like, makeup latex pockets and then releases it. And it looks real because it is real, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, but the stuff that he has to really sell because it's like either too dangerous or it's like it's not realistic. I don't know. There was also sloppy makeup in places. I felt like there was a couple zombies that were pushed backwards or he actually put the camera behind them and the people didn't do the makeup below the neckline. As you can see, like there's a harsh
line
of that. And I'm just like, I saw that several times. You know, oh, someone's shirt would move and the makeup stops. And I'm just like, what are you doing? What are you doing, man? You know better than this. You're the director.
That's fucking, that's amateur as fuck.
I know.
Like, I feel like if we made a movie, we would not do that. Like, come on.
I don't know. Making movies is hard, you know, but like, man.
I get it. But attention to detail. I just, this is why I have a problem with this, you know? And it's not that I dislike this movie. But I feel like I would always have a problem with this no matter what. I didn't see this until after I had watched the original Night of the Living Dead. And I saw that late in my horror career. You know, I was just like 15 or 16 years old. And then I was like, oh my God, there's a remake. And oh my God, it has Candyman in it. You know, so I go rent this movie and I'm like, the fuck is this? Because A, I look at the original so reverently. And then B, by the time I had seen this movie, I knew who Tom Savini was, and I feel like I expected a lot more from him as a horror film director, right? And I guess it's just not for everybody. Like, not everyone is cut out to like helm a film or something, and that clearly could be the case for this. So I don't know. Like, this movie I don't know that it had a chance to succeed. And if you look at its box office returns, it really didn't.
And I don't know if it had a chance to succeed after it was all set up because, you know, even though Jorge, you know, went on to direct many more movies.
Yeah.
He didn't have, like, he wasn't there, right? This production was not easy for Savini. He described it as the worst nightmare of his life. He said only 40% of his ideas actually made it into the final film because without Romero, without Jorge, he clashed with the producers who didn't allow him to explore his vision for the film. So that said, he's actually quoted as saying Creepshow was the hardest because it was five movies in one.
And that's true. He had a lot of work to do on Creepshow.
He did, but that was from a technical standpoint. I bet from a political standpoint that he's just not used to fighting those battles.
That's true.
You know, and just like having to fight with producers, you know,
well,
it's been hard. And I just don't understand why Romero wasn't there. Maybe because he wanted Savini to feel like he could do his own thing.
Well, I feel like George Romero also doesn't like to fight with producers. Like he makes independent film.
I think they were fighting about what Romero wanted or something, you know, or what they were trying to do.
Or what they thought would make money, you know, because if you have a title like Night of the Living Dead, and the way this was marketed back in 1990 was George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. So they even had his name attached to it, you know? And so like they probably were just going for the recognition, and like, and it could have been a producer saying, hey, if we stray too far away from what people already know and love about the movie, the original movie, we're going to not succeed. And so they just wanted something so incredibly fucking similar, you know? And so he was just sort of like castrated to begin with and just couldn't make a movie like that.
Yeah. We should talk about Savini's resume a little bit. I feel like for Romero, he did Martin, Dawn of the Dead, with the, you know, the blue gray zombies. Day of the Dead, which I feel like is kind of his magnum opus as far as like realism.
Yeah.
Still some of the most shocking gore in any movie to date. And then Creepshow, which probably has the most variety of stuff.
Well, because there's a variety of like stories in there.
Yeah. And then Monkey Shines. But others that he did outside of Romero was Friday the 13th,
which is Maniac. Amazing.
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. He also directed more than just this movie. He directed three episodes of Tales from the Dark Side and one segment of in the Theater Bazaar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he directed episodes of Tales from the Dark Side, but that's also a Romero product.
Yep.
You know? Yep. So his work on Friday the 13th, Maniac, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, I think are amazing. I love those 80s movies, right? They're very, very 80s. They're very, very gory. And they're very, very good. And maybe I just have some kind of nostalgia boner for those three movies in particular. But, I mean, I feel like his work on those is great. I feel like his work in Creepshow is great. Even Monkey Shines, you know? And I feel like Tom Savini is good at what he does. And I think there's a reason why he's so famous amongst the horror community, right? His work may not be the best. Like, there are other people who I feel are just a lot better at makeup effects. People who have been nominated for Academy Awards, like Rick Baker and things like that.
Yeah, the people with, like, the animatronics for The Thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and all that. You know, that was never his strong suit.
No.
And so, like, he was being taught to do it, you know, over the phone when he was working on Creepshow. But his best was always, you know, the makeup and latex on real people.
But he's super popular when it comes to the horror community. And even people who are just like casual horror fans know who Tom Savini is. I mean, like, my God, he's been represented on The Simpsons. Like, he's been Simpsons-fied, you know, like, people just know who Tom Savini is. And I feel like this was his shot, like, really, to do something in horror just beyond what he normally does, you know. And if the production was bad, and if it was because of producers or because he didn't have Romero there to have his back or whatever, that's really, really sad. But
I almost wonder if Romero chose him for a reason and wanted him to take it to the next level, you know?
Probably.
And then he just went the opposite way. It'd be interesting. And then they were just friends. It's like, okay, well, you can go the respectful route if that's what you want to do.
I mean, I don't feel like George Romero is the kind of guy to come back to him and be like, you ruined my fucking film.
No, not at all. I think he wanted him to do his own thing, but I think he was prepared to let Tom Savini do what he wanted.
Yeah. And that's probably why he wasn't on set. Like, go make your movie.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to cash a check and that's fine. But obviously, Savini
just felt like he was taking care of someone else's baby.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Like, George Romero just wasn't after it for a check. He took the time to write the screenplay, an updated screenplay. So if we have changes in these characters, it's because George Romero did that, you know? So he already had, like, a blessing, and he was like, here it is. You know, you go do it. But I'm really, really glad that George Romero did not direct this.
Yeah.
Because I feel like once a director goes and makes a remake of their own film.
Well, he kind of ended up doing that. He did his own modernization, right? The last one he did with the cell phones and the video, or the camcorders, right?
Which is a part of the franchise.
Kind of the found footage.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, he's done updated things, but, like, to literally take a movie that he's made before and, like, go ahead and give me a second chance. Like, we see that sometimes when, like, foreign language directors come to America and make an Americanized version of things, like in The Ring, right?
Yeah.
You know, so they get ways to do a redo. Yeah. Or other French movies. Yeah. So, I mean, but, like, for George Romero to come back and say, I'm going to direct the movie I've already directed, like, I don't, it's kind of to me like saying my first one wasn't good enough. Do you have some fun facts for me?
I do, kind of, yes.
Kind of, yes.
Yes. Okay. Kind of, yes. Tom Savini originally wanted to start the film in black and white and then slowly add color.
Oh.
And you can tell that kind of by the way it's written too, because it starts with, like, the same lines and then, like, Barbara's super conservative in, like, 1950s or whatever, and then it kind of starts to diverge, right?
Right.
And so I would have loved that, and I wish they'd have done it.
Yeah, that would have been neat to do that.
I wish that he'd kind of come out with, like, a director's cut today with, like, the extra gore and then, like, do the black and white.
I really want to see, like, what his original movie looks like, and I wish that would be in there because it's kind of like a passage. Like,
or maybe they do rotoscoping and, like, all of the zombies are in color, you know, like all the blood and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. Ving Rhames was considered for Ben. 14 years later, he was cast in the remake of another George Romero zombie film, Dawn of the Dead, from 2004.
And he was very good in that movie, but I feel like Tony Todd is just excellent in this film.
He's great. Bill, Chili Billy Cardeal, appears as a reporter in both the 1968 version and the remake.
Okay.
Yeah. And remember, that's not that much time. It's basically like remaking The Ring today.
God. God. Sometimes I hate it when you speak.
Okay, so about 1 hour and 17 minutes, Russell Striner, who appeared in the original Night of the Living Dead as Johnny, appears in this movie as Sheriff McClelland, who comments about the zombies, quote, yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
They're all messed up.
At one point in the film, a female zombie can be seen walking through a field with the house in the background. The zombie hears the banging of the humans in the house trying to board up the windows and is attracted to the noise, so she turns and begins staggering to the house. This woman actually owned the house in real life. The producers wanted to use the house in the film and agreed to give the woman a small acting part in exchange.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, too, because there aren't that many female zombies in this movie. There's a lot of guy zombies.
And there's one naked woman.
And yeah, one naked. Yeah. So we see like lots of zombie butt in this. Well, in two zombies. So the guy at the beginning and then later on, like female zombie butt. And those are the only two women zombies I can think of in this, aside from Sarah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So this is the only film in the George Romero Associated Living Dead series in which the date of the zombie uprising is mentioned, which is over a radio near the end. And it is August 23rd, 1989.
The zombie uprising.
Mm.
Okay.
So the Mercedes driven by Johnny at the beginning of the film is owned by Tom Savini. According to him, it was the first car he bought after meeting with success, and it broke his heart to wreck it during filming.
They were really, like, honing in on the fact that that car was a Mercedes, too, right? There's, like, showing the emblems and the hubcaps and everything. And I was like, okay, we get it, Johnny. You drive a car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last one. According to the director's commentary, someone sent a copy of the footage of the Mercedes rolling down the hill into the tree to Daimler-Benz, showing the airbag not deploying. They were apparently rewarded with a new car. Fraud.
The airbag not... Oh my God, look at this.
Why was this filmed on 35 millimeter?
Someone could have been killed.
I don't know how true that is. I don't know how he could possibly know that. Some fan told him, no doubt.
Those were fun. But we have some questions to ask about this movie, like we always do. Obviously, this is a horror film. I don't think we need to ask that. It's a remake of a horror film.
Yep.
But were you scared while watching it?
No.
I wasn't either. Like, in ways that I am still when I watch the original Night of the Living Dead. I feel that is a very, very effective horror movie on lots and lots of levels.
Sure.
And this movie could have been. It could have been scary because of the gore. It could have been scary because of lots of things. I feel like both versions sort of succeed in their small cast, small location vibe, right? Which can be really, really tense. The thing is that it's very, very tense in the original and not very tense in this. And I don't know if it's because I've seen it before, obviously, in the original version, or they just don't do it as effectively in this. But I'm not tense. I'm not scared at all while watching this movie. Out of 5 stars, what would you rate Night of the Living Dead 1990?
I rated it 2.5, which is middle of the road for me, beige, average. I think it's shockingly good for what it is.
Yes.
You know, it's entertaining the whole way through. I thought it was good. It's just like I wouldn't interchange it. I wouldn't exchange it. I wouldn't recommend it. I would always recommend the original, you know? This looks like a TV movie. It's too well lit. I also feel like it's oddly tame compared to the original, which I feel like is with the look of it, with the lack of gore, as well as is less ballsy of an ending, right? Where they kind of really double down on like the racism a little bit, you know? Versus in this one, it's kind of ballsy in a different way. Like she shoots the guy that was an asshole during the movie, kind of in a surprise turn, and says, there's another one for the fire. You know, but I feel like it's almost like more important socially with the first one and in many, many ways. And I feel like a lot of that's stripped away and, just to make like, it's almost like those sequels where they're like doubling down on the monster. Mm-hmm. It's like they doubled down on the zombie, you know, and the human drama and kind of left the texture of, you know, the sociopolitics and, you know, those layers at the same time. And so I feel like in those ways, and as a horror movie, it kind of fails for me. And as an important movie in which the first one was, it kind of fails for me or falls flat. And yet the storytelling is still good because it's a good story.
Yep.
So 2.5 for me.
So I gave it 3 stars. Because again, like you just said, it's shockingly good for what it is. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if the original film did not exist and this is the only Night of the Living Dead that we have, you know, I feel like it would be a good horror movie. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a by the books horror story, but I mean, it's not terrible, you know, no. Like I still have a good time watching it, but you're right when you say that the important things of the original are sort of stripped away in this. And I don't think it's not this movie's fault that that happens. It's just that Night of the Living Dead was made in a time where it could say important things.
It could have, and it could have looked a lot better, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we could talk about like this could have been if it was in a vacuum, how good it could have been. It's like saying, you know, what's the worst horror movie from the 90s compared to like the best episode of horror TV. You know what I mean? And which one are you going to remember more? You're going to remember the worst movie, right? And so this is one of those things.
But I mean, you're also right in saying that I probably wouldn't recommend this. If I had to tell people to go watch a version of Night of the Living Dead, it's never going to be this one.
Right.
Right.
Never.
And I am not shy to say that like the original Night of the Living Dead is my favorite horror movie for lots and lots of reasons. That movie spoke to me on so many levels when I was very, very young. And this movie doesn't have any of that. And I don't know that it ever could in the time period that it was made.
No.
Like that original film is very, very special and it just cannot be recreated at all. I don't think that that's to say that we can't have other versions of Night of the Living Dead. I would really love to see this story done like on stage. I feel like that would be great. You know, you don't need the zombies to make this story effective. The human drama is enough, but there is no human drama in this. It's like watching two grown men sort of squabble for no reason when
they then they hang a lantern on it like three or four times. Like, you're acting like children. It's like, could we move past this?
And that's all that they have to do is say there are two grown men acting like children when there are lives at stake. In the original version, though, we have two grown men in a time period where a white man and a black man, you know, having that kind of argument has some meaning, you know, and that's just kind of lost in this version of it. It's all about like setting and time period. And this movie just doesn't have that. It's not to say that it's not a good horror film. You know what I mean? There's zombies, there's gore. It's fun. You know, I really like the updated version of Barbara, but I also love A Final Girl, but that doesn't save it from being a movie that's just not as good as the original fully. All right. So finally, who's the hottest guy in the remake of Night of the Living Dead?
Tony Todd.
Tony Todd, 100%. I don't know that he has anybody that even comes close, really, in this movie. But Tony Todd looks great in this. He sounds great. His voice is like sexy. I don't know. I was just really digging him in this for sure. Well, I think that just about wraps up our conversation on the remake of Night of the Living Dead. As always, we want to know what you think about this movie. As we mentioned earlier, criticism has softened over time. Do you agree with that? You can find us on social media at The Film Flamers on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever they call those things these days, and let us know.
You can email us at tiredqueens@filmflamers.com or call our hotline at 972-666-7733. They're going to cook me to temp.
It was so fucking funny. Oh my God. Here's another one for the fire. We have more zombie conversations coming out for you this month as Chris and I are going to be watching a movie we have never seen before and then deep diving into it. And that works out for us. Usually, right?
Kind of.
Kind of.
Maybe. And that movie is Cargo.
That's right. So stay tuned next week for that conversation. And we have some bonus content coming out for you this month as well. So head over to patreon.com/thefilmflamers, join the family, get all that bonus conversation, and we'll read your name on the next Shooting the Flames.
Well, Robert?
Yes, Chris?
I think it's time for me to put this remake to bed so I can finally get some
sweet dreams. So now I'm thinking about March of the Penguins, but they're zombie penguins.
March of the Zombie Penguins.
March of the Zombie Penguins. Can we make that movie?
Yes.
We need to start writing this down.
Hey, I mean, that one was directed by George Miller.
Was it really?
Totally, we could totally segue into a horror movie.